Hey guys, thank you so much for listening to another episode of the Take 6 podcast. On today's episode, we've got a special guest coming in to talk Raptors. We discuss the second returns of the All-Star game voting. We talk about JV's injury. Vince Carter comes up for a little bit. And then we discuss what Patrick McCaw signing with the Raptors means to this Toronto team. Just before we start, though, just going to remind you guys to go follow us and subscribe to us on Spotify and or Apple Podcasts, and then go follow us on Twitter at @take_6 and follow us on Instagram at @take6podcast. Thank you very much in advance.
Welcome to the Take 6 podcast.
What's going on, everybody? It is Hunter Surplus here, and we've got a good episode coming up with Raptors in mind. On the line, as always, we've got good friend Callum Wise. Callum, how are you, buddy?
Doing pretty well. Just kind of freezing a little bit up here.
Yeah, you know? bearing the cold weather has been what I've been doing the past 2 days. It's finally got a little bit cold out here. And then, replacing Evan Kielhauer for the day, we've got the associate editor at Raptors HQ, Joel Stevens. Joel, thank you for joining us, man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Of course. So I know this is kind of your first time doing the podcast thing, and I'm excited to have you on. I'm excited to, you know, help you out and get some practice reps in here. So thanks again.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Excited to join you guys this afternoon.
Perfect. So on today's show, we'll be talking about the second returns on the All-Star voting. Get into a little bit about Jonas Valanciunas and his injuries. We'll talk a little Vince Carter since he showed up to Toronto this past week. And then the Raptors signed a little bit of guard depth, and we'll get into that and what that means for the overarching team, I guess you could say. So All-Star voting, like I said, the second returns were released this Thursday. And the three guys that I think were pretty obvious to be on the list are on the list. Kawhi Leonard has placed second behind Giannis Antetokounmpo in the front court. Siakam is ninth in front court voting, and then Kyle Lowry is sixth. Are you guys surprised at all by where these guys are placed?
I mean, I've noticed for the guards, it's been the fan vote hard. Like, Derrick Rose is in there. Dwayne Wade's in there, who obviously, based on stats, are not as good as others. But it's definitely for the fan vote. So, I mean, I don't mind that they're in there because, I mean, Dwayne Wade, it's his goodbye season. And Derrick Rose finally is kind of back to his old self. I mean, Kyle Lowry, it'd be cool if he's probably going to get in just on, like, the bench. But I don't think he's going to get a starting role. Kawhi Leonard is not a surprise, and I'm happy to see Siakam's there.
No, I agree with everything you said. Dwayne Wade's sort of the Michael Jordan, Vince Carter element there from back in, what was that, 2000, 2001, when Jordan joined the Wizards. So it's still a little surprising to see him get almost 1.2 million votes total. Lowry sitting under 500,000. That's a little disappointing, but, you know, he's missed some games, hasn't had the type of season scoring-wise that I think would garner him the type of votes from around the league. And Kawhi Leonard, you know, he's the guy that everyone expected. But Pascal Siakam, he's a surprise for me, for sure.
Yeah, I kind of agree with the Siakam being a surprise as well. At the beginning of the season, if you had told me that Siakam was going to be in the top 10 for vote getting in the front court, I would have been shocked and I would have thought you were nuts. But to be honest, I think he kind of deserves a little bit more love. Gordon Hayward's right in front of him. You've got Jason Tatum in front of him as well. And obviously Vince Carter's in there too. And I don't think that Hayward necessarily deserves to be over Siakam based on his season. He has been playing fantastic, and that's kind of been the story of the Celtics this year, is that the guys who played really well last year aren't necessarily performing up to what they should be this season, and that includes Tatum and Hayward. So if Siakam was above those guys, that wouldn't surprise me. But like you guys said with Lowry, he's not putting up the exponentially fantastic offensive numbers, which fans like to see when voting. Basically, anyone outside of Toronto doesn't really know the impact that he has in terms of this team's offense and defense, for that matter, as well. So I don't think he got as much love as maybe he should have. And I think the coaches and players around the league are going to notice his impact both offensively and defensively for the best team in the league right now. And I think that is going to be where he gets in. Like you guys said, he's probably not going to be a starter, but I think he'll be able to slip in there, maybe above Oladipo, maybe above Ben Simmons in terms of the coach and player vote. In terms of like numbers compared to the guys ahead of him, so Kyrie, Oladipo, and Simmons, he's not a whole lot worse than them. His usage rate is much, much lower than all of them. He's sitting at like 19% compared to everyone else pretty much being quite a bit over 20. And his points per game are only 2 under Ben Simmons, 5 under Oladipo, and obviously Kyrie Irving being that fantastic scorer he is. He's only 8 under Kyrie Irving. He's missed some time, so it makes sense him not getting the whole recognition that's there. But I kind of wish he was higher up there. Dwayne Wade is obviously getting that old man vote, which is totally fine with me.
For sure.
And then lastly here, DeMar DeRozan, the kind of big thing surrounding him was that he wouldn't make an all-star team if he played in the West. And you heard that for years and years around DeMar DeRozan, especially after the playoffs came. What do you guys think about that? Does DeMar DeRozan make the all-star team in the West?
Where is he now in the voting? I don't even remember.
Seventh, a month guard.
Seventh, right, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I can't really say, like, there's the West is, like, actually brutal in terms of how many good players are there. But, like, there's been, like, some huge, like, I did not think Doncic would get that many votes. He has more votes than Curry, which is actually insane. But, so, I think anything can happen based on fan votes, but I don't think he has the most fans because he's played in Toronto his whole career, and a lot of people in the U.S. did not like us or still don't like us, so maybe they haven't accepted him yet as one of the better players in the West. So I don't know if he'll make it. I want him to, obviously, but I don't know if he can, just based on, because this year especially, his fan vote has been a huge thing. Like, I would not have thought that Derrick Rose would make it into the All-Star game as a starter, no less. Like, fan vote.
Westbrook, yeah.
Yeah, like, he got a lot of votes. And isn't he injured right now?
Yeah, a little bit.
Minor
yeah.
injury, yeah.
Yeah, minor injury.
But still, like, Derrick Rose, obviously, he might not even be healthy for the All-Star game, knowing him. But
Twitter's becoming just a huge medium for these voting procedures, I guess. Just for comparison, I want to throw this out there. There's 10 players right now in the West with over 1 million votes compared to just 5 in the East. The West front court has 6 total players, ending with Stephen Adams at 1,000,003 votes, pretty much. And that's just that's one more player than the East has total. Yeah, throw that out there. They're getting tons of votes out West.
Yeah, that's Stephen Adams. Like, he's not considered to be one of the like best centers in the league, but I think, like, I told this to Hunter a while ago. Like, he's the nicest guy in the NBA, and I think that shows. And the fans just love him for it. So I definitely, yeah, fan vote is a huge thing. Especially, like you said, Twitter is a huge medium for these votes, and Adams has been all over Twitter with his like videos of him just like hugging players and stuff like that. Just, I mean, I think we have Antetokounmpo, Kawhi, and Kyrie are in the top 5 for voting, right?
Yeah, it looks,
yeah.
We have Doncic and Curry over 2 million, plus LeBron James,
and
obviously.
LeBron, yeah. So, yeah, yeah, you're totally right. The West is getting a lot more votes than we are.
Yeah, the East is getting smacked.
Well, I think part of that comes in fact that the West is a lot more star-studded, especially when it comes to the guards. The guards there are absolutely stacked, and I think that's where, going back to the whole DeRozan thing, I think that's where he's going to have trouble. It was looking okay for him when Klay Thompson wasn't really putting up the numbers that Klay Thompson usually does, and Derrick Rose obviously getting in there is kind of hilarious. But I think the Spurs do need to get one guy in just because of the turn. Not, they started off well. They had a bad couple games in the middle there, and then they've turned it around and have been playing really well. And I think that whether it's the coaches or the players or the media who make these votes, I think they're going to turn that around and kind of put either DeRozan or Aldridge in. And I think DeRozan has made more of an impact on that team. I still don't know, because Thompson's starting to turn it around and Westbrook's just Westbrook. He's playing on, you know, he's putting up the numbers and he's playing on the second best team. So it's kind of tough to see him get in there, but I'd really like to see him in there. I love DeRozan. He's probably my favorite player in the league. So seeing him as an all-star in the West would be fantastic.
I would have to say he almost has to get in. He's averaging 23, I think 7-7, close to that. That might be 7-6, 7 assists and 6 rebounds, but he's the best player on a playoff team right now, and the Spurs are the hottest team heading into the All-Star weekend. So, you know, it's really only the two top guards that are going to get really shoo-ins by the fans. The rest are going to be picked by the coaches, and I would think that DeRozan and Thompson, like you said, maybe tossing Lillard and Westbrook, Harden, you know, it's going to be a tough pick for the coaches and the media.
I think totally. Just like Westbrook and Harden are obviously going to be on the team, just because people would be very upset if they weren't in the All-Star game, just from like their caliber of play. And I mean, DeRozan, Lillard, Thompson, that's like a toss-up. That's probably completely the coach's preference. And is it? Whoever has the most wins going in is the coach?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
So it'd be Nick Nurse and who's in first right
Mike,
now?
Mike Malone.
Mike Malone from Denver.
Yeah.
Interesting duo there.
It'd be fun. Yeah, I think that'd be fun to watch. Nick Nurse being the coach for the All-Star game would be a very, very interesting thing, especially being at his first year.
His first year.
So some guy who's not going to be an All-Star, a bit of a segue into our next topic here, is Jonas Valanciunas. And, you know, I'd like to think that the main reason he's not going to be an All-Star is because of the injury that he's had. And he's been out for a couple weeks already. He's missed quite a few games. And rumor came out this past week, a couple days ago, that he's going to miss another 4 weeks due to that thumb injury. So the only reason I like this is because we get to see more of Jonas Valanciunas in a suit, in those beautiful three-piece suits that he wears, sometimes the bow tie, sometimes the turtleneck. It's one of the better things that comes out of Jonas Valanciunas being injured. And then there's obviously Chris Boucher getting some good minutes, even though he played absolutely horrible last night versus the Nets.
That was really it. For him.
Yeah, I think he was minus 18 in like 4 minutes or something like that.
It was brutal.
It was horrible. And I think, as you know, that happens. You're a young guy, it happens. So anyways, how do you guys see this impacting the Raptors? Especially because 4 weeks isn't, you know, a little amount of time. And you're going to have to think that in terms of conditioning, he's going to get back up to speed. Probably not quickly, being such a big guy. And B, kind of getting that rotation back together where it's either Ibaka or Valanciunas started, depending on who they're playing. So how do you guys think this impacts the Raptors?
We're not necessarily doing bad, but we're not showing as much dominance as we could be. I think just like the fact that we have Monroe as our bench guy instead of the third string is a big thing. Like, he's not bad per se, but obviously the JV Ibaka combo was just tearing it up. Like, they were both averaging like amazing. I thought that it was who you were going to say for someone who was missing the All-Star, because Ibaka obviously not playing as well right now, but was tearing it up at the beginning of the season. Probably like one of the best, like right behind Joel Embiid for best big men in the East, because he was just, his shooting percentage and everything was just unreal. So
that Lakers Jazz game, he really peaked.
Mm-hmm.
He was 15 of 17 against the Lakers, and then perfect 8 for 8 against the Jazz. He was on fire.
And then JV got injured, and now Ibaka is just not doing it. I don't know why. Maybe like he doesn't have. I guess because he doesn't have the chemistry with. But it doesn't really have to do with chemistry with Monroe. I feel like it just he. Something in his mind is telling me he doesn't have the same ability behind him as JV as opposed to Monroe. I don't really know what's going on, but.
Well, if we remember, Lowry also started missing games about the time that JV went down, and Ibaka had a really, like you mentioned, chemistry. Those two had a just almost perfect chemistry on the pick and roll. Ibaka was getting most of his baskets from 5-6 feet away on those little Lowry dump offs. And when he went down, he kind of struggled to mesh with Van Vliet. And I think that's where he started to trip up a little bit with his shooting percentages. Before he went down for those three games on pretty much mid-December, he was coming off of two games that were just, you know, typical Ibaka games. He was shooting nice, and then he immediately comes back and shoots 2 for 10. And that was with Fred VanVleet at point guard.
Yeah.
So that's had an impact, most definitely. So to see Lowry come back, I think we might see a little bit of that early season Ibaka return as well.
Yeah, I think that's just what they were training so hard coming into the season, just like to have that chemistry, especially bringing in such a big caliber talent like Kawhi and not knowing how to play with him at first. They had to obviously be ready for that. So they, like him and adding Siakam to that lineup, they have great chemistry. Lowry and Siakam, like the full court passes are pretty amazing. But yeah, what you said with VanVleet was just, it was pretty ugly when he was starting point guard. I don't know why, because like he commanded that the bench mob last season, but I guess he just hasn't. He's not ready for that starting role yet, as we've seen.
I also think with Ibaka, some of the thing that has really made him succeed is that they always play him or JV when healthy in their favorable situation. So you could see when they played against San Antonio, where Ibaka had to match up against a much bigger LaMarcus Aldridge, who pretty much beat up on Serge the entire game, backed him down, which will make Serge even more tired because he's not as big. He has to put a lot more effort into trying to stop him from backing down on him. And JV would have combated that much better based on body size. And JV is like a low-key good defender. Not a lot of people think JV is a good defender, including myself. He's pretty horrible on the pick and roll, but his numbers inside the paint are pretty undeniable. He has the best defended field goal percentage within 6 feet. So pretty much within the paint, he has the best defended field goal percentage in the entire NBA. In the whole league, he defends that shot within 6 feet the best. 46.9% is what opponents shoot when he's the main defender within 6 feet. That's awesome. And then his contested rebound rate is 47.7%. He's getting a lot of rebounds with, you know, usually there's smaller guys because JV's a really big guy. He's a really good rebounder, but that's higher than guys like Anthony Davis, Hassan Whiteside, and JaVale McGee, who are very good rebounders.
I think he's the best Raptor in knowing how to use his size effectively, both on defense and in rebounding. Like, he knows how to get position. He knows how to fight to stop big men from scoring on the block. He knows how to get position, rebounding the ball. So we're missing that size and that effective use of his size too.
Yeah, and people say, oh, well, that size comes in Greg Monroe, but JV and Greg Monroe aren't really comparable other than their body size. You know, Greg Monroe can't shoot at all. JV's not a fantastic shooter, but at least he can pretend that he can stretch the floor. Last year, he shot a bunch of threes, and was hitting them at a pretty decent clip. But yeah, I think the main thing is that chemistry, like you said there, Callum, between, you know, Lowry and Ibaka. They haven't, you know, they've clicked, and then when Lowry's out, and then also the favorable matchups, right? It sucks to watch Ibaka play against a lot of these bigger guys, like I mentioned before, LaMarcus Aldridge. It's just, you don't like seeing these guys in unfavorable situations. So I think that's going to come up more, unfortunately, when we, within these next 4 weeks. And I think afterwards, once JV comes back, I'm sure they'll give Ibaka a little bit more of a resting time just because he's played so many minutes. He's logged so many minutes, hasn't had a chance to rest because, like, outside of his injuries, he hasn't had a whole lot of time to rest because of those heavy minutes that he's been playing in position of Valanciunas. And then, like I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, the Raptors played the Hawks earlier. Vince Carter came back, and people are speculating this is his last game. Do you think he, and also people are speculating that he's going to play for the Raptors one day before he retires. Do you guys think that he is ever going to play for the Raptors again?
That's a tough one because he kind of left on bad terms, not going to lie. So people are hopeful, but I don't know if he wants to. That's completely, like, we don't know his decision until he makes it, because it's kind of up in the air at this point. Obviously, it's not the same people in management, I don't think. It's not the same president, is it?
No, it's not. No. Okay. He has come out and said, you know, I do want to come back one day and play for the Raptors one more time. Mm. And so he's said that. But like you said, the decision isn't going to be it. I don't think they get him this year. My biggest thing with it is that, you know, if the Raptors are contending, they're not gonna pick him up. Because why? First of all, like, why would you pick him up if you can pick up a guy who will actually log you some decent minutes? Because right now, Vince Carter wouldn't fit on this team based on the fact that, you know, there's a lot of depth at his positions, and he wouldn't log minutes. So why would you pick him up? Just, I get it for the, you know, sentimental value and all that kind of stuff, but I don't think he fits within this team, and why pick up a guy who's not going to play? That's what I wouldn't get. What about you, Joel? What do you think?
I agree. For this year, I think that you asked the question, does he come to the Raptors this year? I think the question is, does he even retire after this year? He's 42, but he's still playing pretty effective basketball in the minutes that he gets. This year, he started 8 games for the Hawks, for example, and he's averaging 7 points, 2 rebounds, and 3 assists. Those aren't bad numbers. And his shooting percentage, you know, he's basically just turned into a 3-point shooter, a spot-up shooter. So when you separate these two careers that he's had, the all-star career where he was the number one option doing everything, and the role player 3-point shooter career, pretty much the second half of his career. You look at someone like him and you ask, you know, can he stretch that out even longer? And I think he does. I think he wants to be the oldest player. I think he wants to do something like that. He never won a ring. So he wants to leave his mark in a way that, you know, that he can be put in the record book some other way than winning a ring. And playing at 44 would pretty much do it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure he just wants to outlast Dirk, because it's just those two left as the oldest players in the league. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw something a couple weeks ago of him saying, I don't want to retire this year. Obviously, pending injury, because he is getting pretty old, but I don't think injuries have been a big thing for him. So, I mean, if he does stay another year, I don't know. If he wants to play the whole year, Toronto's not picking him up because, like Hunter said, he doesn't fit on this team.
Right.
I think it's just a one-game type situation if he does resign. So, I mean, we'll have, like we said before, we'll have to see what he makes, like, his decision at the end of the season.
Yeah. if we're contending next year and we're making a playoff push, you know, this is assuming Kawhi returns, everyone comes back, and we're doing the same thing next year as we are this year. I think we might sign him towards the end of the year. You know, it'd be something poetic, and it could make sense on the roster, but not for a, like Hunter said, not for a full-time roster rotation position.
Yeah.
And next year is also the 25th anniversary of the team. So, you know, that's kind of the he's the biggest name that the Raptors have had. And a lot of people, when they think of the Raptors, they think of Vince Carter, 360 dunks, through the leg dunks, that slam dunk competition. And like you said, poetic is the perfect word to describe that. I think that if he were to be signed to the Raptors, that is when his playing career would finish. And I think, Callum, like you alluded to it earlier, that you don't know how long his career is going to last. And I think he's kind of waiting for that time to maybe, even if it's one more game in a Raptors uniform. And I'd love for them, if they do sign him, they have to bring back those purple jerseys. Nike, they would have to bring back the purple jersey, put a dinosaur somewhere on the jersey. And and I think that would be, like you said, Joel, poetic. It would be beautiful. It would be amazing. And so lastly, we've been talking a lot about contracts and signing. Patrick McCaw, the former Golden State Warrior, after three games with the Cleveland Cavaliers and their whole tampering situation, is now a Toronto Raptor. What do you guys think about this? They dropped who they? I am totally blanking on who they dropped or released earlier.
Lorenzo Brown.
There it is. Yeah, Lorenzo Brown. So they dropped Lorenzo Brown, and basically they're picking up Patrick McCaw to replace Lorenzo Brown. What do you guys think about this?
Wait, did they get rid of him from the team, or did he go down to the 905?
They waived him.
Waived him. Oh,
yeah.
Not surprising. He wasn't the greatest player, not gonna lie. But I mean, it doesn't hurt to try. He's not gonna be a huge position player, obviously. But I mean, if he puts up some numbers for us, that wouldn't hurt. Obviously, because our bench has been actual trash, so I think a little switch up, like we were talking about in the previous Leafs podcast. If you guys haven't heard that, go check it out. we were talking about the power play line and how a little bit of a change wouldn't hurt. So I think that's what the Raptors are trying to do right now.
Yeah, I gotta be honest. This is the signing is a mystery to me. It doesn't make, I mean, it makes sense roster wise, but the Raptors could have gotten anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have gotten a better player at that newly opened position. I'm not sure why they chose Patrick McCaw, to be honest. I mean, yes, he's a spot-up shooter. He plays some defense, and he has that championship experience, which is, you know, the most shocking thing. But he's not a ball handler, and he's not a sort of lead guard. You know, he's going to be on the floor, but he's going to be utility player, pretty much. So it's a mystery to me why they chose this route instead of waiting to see who landed on the waiver wire in 3 weeks or so, or just after the trade deadline.
That's a really good point. I'm kind of in the same boat as you there. Outside of his championship pedigree, there's not a whole lot that he does that the Raptors don't do already, and that the Raptors aren't fairly good in. I know their three-point shooting hasn't been very good this season, but you've got to think eventually, I mean, you got to hope eventually that those three balls, those wide open three balls are going to be dropping from OG and DeLon Wright and, you know, CJ Miles and Norm Powell. But what's kind of been going around as of late is this whole idea that they signed him because of the insider information, quote unquote, that he has on the Warriors. He played 2 years of championship basketball with the Warriors where they played with that death lineup, and he knows those little plays that they run, the whole screens. And that's nothing that you couldn't get from, you know, game tape or whatever. But maybe he knows how they're going to play them or what scenarios they play them in. And it gives a little bit more in-depth information than the Raptors can get from just a video or from just talking to scouts and people from around the league. And I think in theory, that's, you know, it's a good idea. That's all fine and well, but the Warriors are a smart team. There's a reason that they're the best team that, you know, arguably the best team that we've ever seen. And I don't know how much a Patrick McCaw is really going to help push the needle that much further in terms of knowing what they're going to do and being able to play with this team. Yeah, and I think one thing that I kind of am thinking about is he left a 2-year, $5 million deal on the table from the Warriors that he left and didn't take. And I'm thinking maybe this signals to some sort of turmoil in the Warriors locker room, and I think it's a little bit further than just KD and Draymond, which we saw earlier. And because why would you leave a really good championship team where he'd be able to play some pretty important minutes off the bench based on the fact that they have no bench really? And so maybe I'm really hoping this is true, that there's a little bit more turmoil in the Warriors locker room than people are knowing about and what people realize. And so maybe this could give the Raptors a bit of a better chance when it comes down to championship time, when the Raptors, who I'm you know, betting money on going into the finals against the Warriors, maybe it gives them a little bit of an advantage, kind of making the switch from this perfect team that we've never seen before to a team who's got a little bit more trouble than you think. They've got a little more in-house issues than they would like.
Oh, Callum, you want
to? No, I told you. Go ahead.
Okay. I agree. I think Pat McCaw is the type of player that you would want to have around, like you said, to kind of signal when there's something wrong, when there's something not going the way that, you know, the Warriors might want it to. The Raptors might have him just as sort of that advanced scout, you know, to signal, like you said, when there's a little more turmoil in the locker room. But to hope that he's like a James Bond type character, that's I don't know, man. Like I said, it feels like a mystery to me why we would choose Pat McCaw. But I guess that's the more obvious, the reason why we picked him up was to basically have an edge if we saw the Warriors in the finals.
I think ultimately it's, you know, I'd say very little risk to almost no reward, really. Like, unless McCaw can have a breakout, you know, 20-point game in the finals or in the playoffs even, or you know, if a game that Kyle Lowry's not playing and he can have a breakout game like that, I don't see much of a reward or risk, really, for that matter. So it's a safe bet for the team to just kind of go out and get someone early. And maybe, you know, Masai Ujiri usually knows what he's doing, so maybe he has good eyes on what this young guy has been doing, and maybe he sees some good potential for him, which is never a bad thing, really. And I think either way, it's an improvement from Lorenzo Brown. He wasn't really doing all that much. He did have a couple impact games, I want to say Nuggets and Pacers or Grizzlies and Pacers, when they had those big comebacks. He did log a few good defensive minutes there. But other than that, kind of a zero.
Yeah, he was struggling.
I think I figured out why McCaw's on our team. Just because of all the beef that's happening in Golden State, I think when we face him in the finals, he's going to say some shit to Draymond. It's going to trigger him. He's going to set him off. He's going to do something stupid.
And then Draymond and Ibaka are just going to fight for 15 minutes.
No, he's going to say something. He's like, yo, Katie, said something about you. And then they're going to start fighting in their own team, like old times.
Right.
We're just going to win by default.
He knows that trigger word.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, that might be the best part. So if we see Patrick McCaw in the finals, make sure to get your phone out and start recording whatever's happening on the Warriors bench there. So I think that'll do it for today. We have a pretty good show there, guys. Once again, Joel, really appreciate you coming on. Thank you for spending your time with us today and all the insight that you had there. Really appreciate you coming on, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Of course, and Callum Wise, you, sir, have a fantastic day. Everybody, go check us out on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where we are. And then go to the website, takesix.org, where you can find a couple articles here and there. And we also post our podcast there.